State College to Philadelphia, Williamsport to Pittsburgh, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Kamala Harris ran for president in 2020, pledging to ban fracking. What would a fracking ban do to Pennsylvania's economy, and what disruption would it cause to our energy supply? Guy Shiraki of the Commonwealth Foundation is here with the answer. It is a hidden gem, steeped in Civil War and railroading history. Joe Geiger has Ashley Zimmerman from the Northern Central Railway of York in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And in the race for Pennsylvania's U.S. Senate seat, it is getting difficult to separate myth from fact. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania gives it a try on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Guy Shiraki of the Commonwealth Foundation in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Several Pennsylvania politicos had time in the spotlight at the recent Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Both Governor Josh Shapiro and Lieutenant Governor Austin Davis had time at the podium. While a number of Democratic U.S. senators facing difficult re-election fights dodged the convention, Pennsylvania's U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. did attend. Notably absent was U.S. Senator John Fetterman, who said he was instead spending time at home with his family. A simmering feud between Fetterman and Shapiro has spilled out into several media articles in recent weeks after unconfirmed reports that Fetterman advised Kamala Harris against picking Shapiro as her running mate. Meanwhile, back here in Penn's Woods, a flight delay caused Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to arrive late for a Commonwealth Court hearing over the validity of petitions to have his name placed on the November presidential ballot. The court moved forward without hearing his testimony. A Democrat-affiliated group is trying to have Kennedy's efforts invalidated for alleged deficiencies. No timeline has been set for a ruling. At the same time, Kennedy's running mate hinted that they may drop out of the race and support Republican Donald Trump. Radical pro-Hamas groups in Pittsburgh were attempting to have a measure placed on the November ballot that would prohibit the city from doing business with any business that has ties to Israel. Opponents labeled the measure anti-Semitic and said it would pose a major threat to the city's day-to-day operations by disrupting supply lines. A challenge to the validity of nearly two-thirds of the signatures on petitions to place the question on the ballot resulted in an agreement to withdraw the petitions. The anti-Israel coalition indicated it would try again to get enough valid signatures to place the initiative before voters. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. When she ran for president in 2020, Kamala Harris pledged to place a ban on fracking. She is attempting to back away from that position now that she is her party's nominee, but the Biden-Harris administration has engaged in a war on fossil fuels, so there are concerns going forward. Here to discuss what impact a ban on fracking would have is Guy Shiraki. He is senior fellow at the Commonwealth Foundation. Guy, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Guy, in the past, Kamala Harris has said that she supports a ban on fracking. Now she's trying to back away from that she needs to compete here in Pennsylvania as perhaps the key battleground state. Her opposition to fracking, was that a one-time thing, or has that been a career-long position of hers?
It's a career-long position, and it's very much in keeping with who she is. She's been very much a spokesperson and an advocate for banning fossil fuels, for advocating for the use of so-called green energy, which you and I have talked about in the past, isn't necessarily green and doesn't produce much energy. No, and really was a key point when she was running for president back in 2020. She promised in multiple town halls that she was, in fact, in favor of a ban on fracking. And it's only now in 2024, where she is now the nominee for president, and her strategists have explained to her that places like Pennsylvania are up for grabs, that there seems to be a change. And I just would remind your listeners that the only reason we're even talking about a supposed change in her position is not because she said it or not because she answered a question, but a staffer, who we don't know who this person is, but a staff person put out a message on social media saying she no longer holds that position and no longer supports a ban. So that's the only reason. Every time Kamala Harris has talked about fracking as a candidate, as vice president, has been full-throated, very clear support to ban fracking. So I believe that's her position because she's held it for years, and every time she's ever talked about it, that's what she says. And I believe that if a national public figure tells you multiple times that they believe in something, I eventually believe that that's what they really mean.
If you look at the Biden-Harris record on energy, it has been one of not only opposition, but really an outright war on fossil fuels, has it not?
It has been, and go back to, again, to the 2020 campaign and time since. President Biden, as I mentioned in my column in Broad and Liberty, you know, Kamala Harris says, I want to ban fracking. It seemed as though Joe Biden as a candidate wanted to one-up her, and he said, no, I'm going to end fossil fuels. And he did that in his Joe Biden sort of serious whisper as he leaned into the questioner and said, we're going to ban fossil fuels. So she's very much at home, as I said before. They would like to get away from fossil fuels, which means not only getting rid of Pennsylvania coal, but getting rid of American oil and American and Pennsylvania natural gas, and to try and take us to so-called green energy, which really isn't green and doesn't produce much energy. So they're two peas in a pod. They are creating these policies that harm fossil fuels, which in essence harm our way of life and make energy more expensive now. And if they time it just right and put their policies in place, they'll cause inflation, slow down the economy, strengthen our enemies. And then in 2028, they would leave the stage and leave the mess to their successors. We have a hope that we can stop this in 2024 and don't have it go further, because pursuing a path of either banning fracking or even worse, ending fossil fuels is nothing but a ticket towards inflation, thousands and thousands of people out of jobs, and empowering Russia and China. That sounds like a formula for disaster to me.
Let's talk a little bit more about the economic impact on Pennsylvania. Guy, Pennsylvania has enormous resources of particularly natural gas through the Marcellus Shell play and other areas. And our economy, the economy in a large part of Pennsylvania, is literally and figuratively powered by the energy industry. So wouldn't this have a devastating effect on the Pennsylvania economy if a ban on fracking went into place?
Would have a devastating impact. You're exactly right. And I always say to folks, you know, think for a moment of Pennsylvania as sort of a rectangle. Everything along the north, along the New York border, and everything on the west, bordering Ohio, coming down to West Virginia, that region has more energy in natural gas than Saudi Arabia has in oil. I mean, just put that in context. Pennsylvania can produce more energy over our lifetime than Saudi Arabia can. And Saudi Arabia is thought to be sort of the center, the ground zero for oil production. We have more energy under our feet. Moreover, Lohman, as somebody like you who knows Pennsylvania's history and Pennsylvania's economy, the energy and taking it out of the ground is in some of the more economically challenged parts of Pennsylvania, the places that once had timber or once had coal or once had oil themselves, and all that's gone to pass. We now have natural gas. So it's not only an enormous economic driver for the state, but to all the Pennsylvanians who live along northern Pennsylvania and western Pennsylvania down into the southwest, it's an opportunity to bring their communities back. It's an opportunity for their children to stay here and make good-paying jobs. The Marcellus Shale Coalition, the organization that sort of represents all of the energy groups, and not just the producers, but all the people that supply their trucks and the piping, says that there are as many as 250,000 Pennsylvanians who work directly or supply the industry. And as I wrote in my column, that doesn't even count the stores they shop at, the hospitals and doctors they visit, all the places. So there are at least 250,000, if not more, Pennsylvanians whose very livelihood depend on this. To me, if you have a natural resource that can provide low-cost, very efficient energy, give jobs to at least 250,000 people, and revive economically depressed communities, that's a grand slam. I don't know any reason as a politician you would want to do anything to take that away. It's a missed opportunity that would just devastate these economies and hurt our national security.
We are talking with Guy Shiraki. Guy is a senior fellow at the Commonwealth Foundation based in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, about what would happen if there was a ban on fracking, the impact on Pennsylvania and nationally. And Guy, even if a ban on fracking went into place in the United States, that doesn't diminish in any way the need for energy worldwide. So wouldn't other countries just simply pick up where we left off?
Absolutely, Loman, and you're right. Look, it's not only common sense, it's what's happening. China is building the equivalent of two coal-powered plants to generate electricity each week. Let me repeat that. China is building the equivalent of two coal-powered energy plants. The Chinese are not going to freeze to death. The Chinese are not going to have their hospitals run out of power. The Chinese are not going to have their factories producing iPhones go out of business. They're building coal-fired plants. The Germans are building coal-fired plants. Why? Because they're dependent on Russia for their natural gas, and they can't afford the prices that Putin's charging, and they can't afford the reality that when Putin gets angry, he sometimes literally turns the spigot off. Imagine a world in which people in northern Pennsylvania, in Bradford County, Susquehanna County, and the businesses that support them in Scranton and Williamsport were producing so much energy that not only Pennsylvanians had it, but we could sell it to the Germans. We could sell it to the Poles. Imagine the jobs we would create. Imagine the wealth that would be created. But also think how the world is a more stable place and the air is cleaner. The Germans are reopening coal-powered plants because they don't want to freeze to death and they don't want their factories to go silent when Putin decides to charge too much or turn off the valve. Again, I mean, you've hit on it. We are cutting off our own energy. We are harming our own jobs. And in the process, the world's air is going to get dirtier because unless anybody thinks that China is going to run coal factories cleaner than we can run natural gas, you're making the air dirtier. This is such a disastrously bad policy in every conceivable way. It's amazing to me that serious people running for office would ever say it. It is a disaster in every way. Dirtier air, less security, and we hurt our own jobs. It makes no sense to me. You have to be a real extreme ideologue to want to do it.
We have been talking with Guy Shiraki, who is a senior fellow at the Commonwealth Foundation in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Guy, tell us a little bit about the Commonwealth Foundation. Also, your writings can be read in a number of places. Where can we find them?
The Commonwealth Foundation is a think tank. It's a policy organization that I'd like to say puts forth common sense ideas built around increasing opportunity and prosperity. We're very focused on things like increasing Pennsylvania's energy production, making sure that Pennsylvania is not taxed or regulated to death so our small businesses can grow, and supporting school choice so that young kids have the opportunities to attend schools that work. So I'm proud to be part of them because we're looking how to increase opportunity and help people be able to do better and each generation do better than us. And I write as part of that, and you can find my columns at Broaden Liberty, Real Clear Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania Town Hall. And I write about these issues and the politics of these issues and how they impact us every day in our lives. And for those folks that like social media, you can follow me on Twitter or X, at PA Suburbs Guy, as I now live in suburban Philadelphia down in Chester County.
Guy Shiraki of the Commonwealth Foundation. Guy, thank you for being back with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity to talk about something very important to Pennsylvanians.
The Northern and Central Railway of York is steeped in Civil War and railroading history. To learn more about the railway, Joe Geiger has Ashley Zimmerman, Executive Director of the Railway, in the Community Benefit Spotlight. Joe?
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Ashley, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Thank you for having me.
So, Ashley, as the Executive Director of the Northern Central Railway of York, you've got to know a lot about this organization. Tell the listeners, if you would, what you need them to know about who you are.
Yes. So Northern Central Railway of York, formerly known as Steam into History, we are located in New Freedom, Pennsylvania. So about 4 minutes right off of Route 83. We are an educational nonprofit with a mission of economic development through tourism. Our rail line's really unique. We cover about 18 miles one way. And what is really unique about our train is Abraham Lincoln actually traveled it not once, but twice. So first, it is known that he traveled north and stopped at Hanover Junction, which is a historical landmark. We like to think that he started to, you know, write the Gettysburg Address there, did some rehearsals there as well, as he headed off west to head to Gettysburg. And then the second time he wrote it, unfortunately, was on his funeral when he passed through all the different areas. So that's what makes our train really unique. We do more than just history, though, but anytime you do come and ride the train, you can ride anywhere from 1 hour to 2 hours to 3 hours. And we do a lot of narration, historical narration about the Civil War and the Industrial Revolution and just history of the towns along the way. But then we also do a lot of fun things, too, for all ages. We just, this past weekend, we had princesses on board. We have a big event coming up called our Cowboy Weekend. And Santa Claus is also very loves trains, too. So Christmas is a big time for us as well.
So you're a living historical experience. People actually get to ride that train and see what it was like back in the day. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
So our train station, Steam into History, we started out with an 1860s replica steam engine. It's the William H. Simpson number 17. You know, it actually looks like one of the oldest steam engines in the country, but she's actually one of the youngest steam engines in the country. So that's really cool. So we started out with our steam engine, and then we've grown our fleet of rolling stock of our 1860 cars. We now have four authentic replica 1816 coach cars that represent first-class travel back in that 1860s time period. We've also had to evolve a little bit as well, and we do have two mid-century parlor cars that are really cool. They're Pullman styles with a full bar and very, like, 1950s retro look, and that is pulled by our 1950 diesel. So we're very proud to offer railroading experiences from the 1860s to the golden ages of the 1960s. So it's a full gamut of many things that sounds we provide like, community.
Sounds like a great day. Tell us a little bit about the incentive or the initiative of Bill Simpson and Reed Anderson to put this together and get it on track.
So talk about two amazing gentlemen for York County, and we're huge philanthropists for the area. And they're really good friends. They, you know, the story is that they had this vision for York County because the Civil War history and Industrial Revolution history is so strong in York County. They were like, you know, why is everybody going to Lancaster and just driving right through and heading over to Gettysburg? Like, there's so much to learn here and to experience here in beautiful Southern York County. So they went out, they fundraised, they built this $2 million steam engine, and here we are 11 years later being one of the top tourist attractions in York County. So with their vision and their support, they both unfortunately have passed away since then, but it's a legacy that I am so proud to be a part of and to grow in York County. And their family, Reed's family and Bill's family, are both very much involved, and we have board members that are family members. Our current board president is Reed Anderson's daughter, Jody Anderson Lighty, and it's a big family affair, and it's great to keep their legacy going.
So you have a lot of themes attached to this program, the authenticity of the railroad offering passengers the experience of a replica Civil War era steam locomotive. Just in itself, that would be a lot of fun for people, very relaxing way to enjoy the area. The scenery's great, the theme program rides you do throughout the year are all great, but this is premium equipment. This isn't like a replica. This is like the real deal.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And it's very expensive, Joe. You can imagine.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. And my guest today is Ashley Zimmerman, the executive director of the Northern Central Railway of York, which is in Freedom, Pennsylvania. So you have a couple of programs coming up. Tell us a little bit about your programs.
As we head into the fall and to winter, that is our biggest time of the year. So coming up in October, the second weekend of October, We'll be hosting our fifth annual Pennsylvania Cowboy Weekend. So it's a really great two-day event. Again, second weekend of October. We're expecting over 1,000 people to come, ride the train, experience like what it would be like to be robbed by the Wild West gang.
Wow.
Back in the 1860s, they robbed the train. They rob it for another partnering nonprofit, you know, so bring your dollar bills and everything so that the Cowboys can rob you. And then you can come back after the train ride, and you can actually experience the authentic, like, 1860s cowboy camp. So it's set up like a whole, I think there's usually about 80 cowboys and horses that come, and they set up this huge campground area at our partners at Summit Grove Campground. And then we also have got some other, you know, fun cowboy carnival items of bounce houses and sand art and leather stamping and pony rides and all that kind of fun stuff. So there's plenty to do for everybody in the 2 days.
Sounds like a great place to visit for tourists coming into the central Pennsylvania region to go there. Why don't we know about this treasure?
Sometimes I feel like we're the best kept secret in York County. We are still very young in our tourist, our long story here. We were only 11 years in. So we're continuing to grow. We've gotten a lot of great support from our Visitors Bureau in Gettysburg and Lancaster and, of course, York County. So we just want people to come out and enjoy the experience and learn something about York County.
With your program, how do you know you're making a difference in the community?
We look at a lot of numbers, of course, as being the executive director. We're always like, oh, how many riders did we have this year? Where do they come from? Are they, you know, what's the economic impact? But I also, you know, I got to look at the warm and fuzzy side of things, too. And I think what's the most heartwarming, and I really think what Bill and Reed's their vision was, is my favorite part is that every weekend there are kids, parents, grandparents, multiple generations coming together to enjoy a train ride where nobody's sitting on their phone. They're looking out the window. They're talking about what happened back in the 1860s. They're learning something. They've got smiles on their face. They're relaxing. They're enjoying interacting with the cast of characters that we might have on the train that day. And just having that family moment, that means a lot to me. And I know we're giving back to York County and the local businesses, and it's really great. I'm a York County girl, so I'm very proud of it. That it's a great way for me to give back to my community.
Ashley, if people listening to the program would like to contribute to your organization, either financially or in volunteer time, how would they find you?
Please visit us at northerncentralrailway.com. We're located in New Freedom, Pennsylvania. So the best way to support us is to buy a train ticket. But we also do have several fundraising campaigns that you can donate directly on the website. You can mail a check-in. You become a member of our program. You can come and volunteer, too. We love volunteers that come and help us greet guests or clean the coach cars or help us with track work or mechanical stuff or mailers. We have volunteer opportunities for everybody at any age.
Oh, man, maybe this would be a good site for us to do a board meeting.
Sounds good.
There you go. That'd be awesome.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program, and my guest today is Ashley Zimmerman, who's the executive director of the Northern Central Railway of York. Ashley, you've been a terrific guest. Thank you for being on our program.
Thank you so much.
Back to you, Loman.
The pitched battle for Pennsylvania's U.S. Senate seat between incumbent Robert P. Casey Jr. and Republican challenger Dave McCormick has made it difficult to separate myth from fact. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania talks about it on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Senator Bob Casey has made a living off you, the taxpayer. Now that he approaches another re-election this November, we're seeing him emerge for the first time in many years. He's had the advantage of his family's name to allow him to quietly pour trillions of taxpayer dollars into partisan pet projects while largely going unnoticed. However, it's time that Pennsylvanians move away from an outdated family brand and start focusing on rebuilding our economy that has been broken due to the Casey's spending spree. Casey loves Bidenomics. Don't let his current rhetoric fool you. The senator has voted 98.5% of the time with the Biden-Harris administration. Despite crippling inflation, rising gas prices, and energy rates soaring, Senator Casey is doubling down and choosing partisan projects and special interests over you, the taxpayer. Bidenomics is Badenomics. You know this to be true because you experience this every day. Since President Biden and Vice President Harris took office, they've spent nearly $6 trillion of your hard-earned resources, and Bob Casey voted to spend every penny of it. This administration's lack of understanding of basic economic policies has resulted in you spending more for your day-to-day goods and getting less for your money. According to the Joint Economic Committee, CPI data released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that Pennsylvanians pay an average of $968 more per month compared to that of January of 2021 to purchase the same amount of goods. What's changed since this time? President Biden and VP Harris took office, and Senator Casey voted in line with their $5.5 million spending spree. As Pennsylvanians, we should not have to choose between filling up a tank of gas or putting food on the table. But Bob Casey, high atop his ivory tower, has shown no sincere interest in the people that he represents or the challenge of feeding your family. Let's fact-check everything our esteemed senator has claimed. Myth: corporate greed is driving up the cost of everyday life. Fact: Senator Bob Casey has endorsed and spent nearly $6 trillion of your hard-earned money and manipulated data points to shift blame for record-high inflation. Read AFP's researcher Kurt Kouchman's Bidenflation Blame Game Report to see the facts and figures. Myth: Senator Casey's own website claims that he's championing economic policies that lower costs for families. Fact: Bob Casey voted for the, quote, Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, which since its implementation has yet to reduce inflation. Instead, it racked up trillions of dollars in new DC spending. And finally, myth. The Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act is making Pennsylvania stronger and, quote, more resilient. Fact: the infrastructure bill, which carries a price tag of $1.2 trillion, allocated only a fraction of the entire spending bill to traditional infrastructure, such as roads and bridges. This legislation, by and large, carved out resources to special interests and partisan pet projects. Senator Bob Casey is doubling back on his message, and our activists are working night and day to ensure that constituents across the Commonwealth know this to be true. Through our Prosperity is Possible campaign, we are delivering real-time solutions that Senator Casey could implement tomorrow to get this economy back on track. Will he continue to play partisan games, or will he continue to vote in lockstep with the Biden-Harris administration? The choice is his. Head to prosperityispossible.com to read more about our solutions and send a message to Bob Casey to suggest he get to work. This is Emily Green, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 29 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRVI-FM in Ridgeway, WHLM-AM in Bloomsburg, along with WKHB-FM in southwestern Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
Thank you.